Am I, do I let start?
All right, another episode of the FA podcast. We've been covering tons of topics, all kind of stuff, but there is a hot one coming up. We'll get to that in a second. But first, we got to give shout outs to everybody that helps the podcast and everything on the Final Approach side go and all the partners that we deal with. And it's Weatherby and Federal Ammunition and Roger Sporting Goods and Leupold and Dogtra. And speaking of Dogtra, we're going to go right. Because you just said you have a new dog, so we're talking to Paul Wade from Delta Waterfowl. So what your title now is like senior communications manager and senior duck hunter killer conservationist and chaser,
Yeah,
right?
I don't know about the whole killer part, but you know,
Yeah, we'll leave that out.
I do my part to support ammunition companies.
That's
So,
perfect. That's
yeah.
perfect. That's exactly what we want to do. So what'd you
Yeah.
say? How long have you been without a dog?
You know, I had kind of a tragic thing happen last year. I got a golden retriever pup and she died after 9 months. So she had cancer as a puppy. And so my breeder found out that that I'd lost the dog. And so she said, "Well, you need a dog." And so she said, "I've got another litter, different lineage, of course, but still
Right.
good hunting
Right.
lineage. Come pick out a dog." So I did. And so now I have Lucy, and she'll be a full year at the end of this month. And so she's been in training all summer, and we've gone teal hunting twice. And the first hunt, I didn't have any opportunities at teal. Lots of wood
Yeah.
ducks around, no opportunities at teal.
Hey.
And Friday I went out again and had a pair of teal coming right at me, and I thought, oh, this is going to be good. And for whatever reason, they peeled off at about 50 yards, and
Right.
I made a snapshot, and of course my dog wanted to jump out of the boat and go get whatever, and I had to sadly say no bird, no bird, no bird. So
Yeah.
we're still awaiting retrieve number one for
That's right.
up, but yeah.
That's right. That's, listen, that's a crazy process. And, for all the time I know I end up putting into the dogs. And then finally getting it out of them and whatever, but it's just like it is a struggle for sure. Doesn't matter if you got a great one, they're all have different personalities, they're all just totally different, and you
Yep.
just gotta kind of go with it. But I can definitely tell you, like, the worst season I've ever had, and since I've been hunting, is the season where I had no dog. I
Yeah.
was going into the season, Money was nine, so we were going into his ninth year, and I'm in China working, for work, and my buddy who watches him and is a trainer said, "I'm running him to the vet, something's up," and he was gone by the time he got to the vet. So
Yeah.
then that whole season, no dog, was the worst season I've ever had, and it wasn't even, I didn't want to go. I didn't
Yeah.
want to go.
There were some tough moments last year for sure.
Yeah.
I've never had a really good dog. I had a golden retriever. This is my third golden. So the previous one lived to be 12 and a half, and she was the most wonderful, kind, nicest dog in the world.
They
But
are.
if anything was in the way, if there was like a stick, a stump, a little bit of weeds, no, she wasn't doing it. She'd come back and look at you like, "I'm not doing that." So the one that I had last summer was
They're all
Ruby.
different.
She was a real red golden, and she'd take your leg off to get at anything. So she was the exact opposite.
She had fire, right?
Yeah, and
Yeah.
this one, Lucy, has good fire too.
Good.
She's a little more tempered than the last one,
Good.
but now we're in
Because you
that
can't
teen.
teach it. You
No,
can't teach the fire.
she's got the drive. We're
Good.
now we're a little bit in the teenage years
Oh,
where
yeah.
where
Oh, yeah.
sit means maybe I'm gonna sit, not
I definitely
entirely gonna sit, but I know I'm supposed to sit, but maybe I will, maybe I
I'm gonna
won't.
test it. It's kind
Yeah,
of sort of a
exactly.
suggestion.
Yeah. Yep. So we're in that little phase, but
Oh,
I'm headed down to Illinois this week too to hunt teal with a couple friends of mine after our season here in Wisconsin ends. And so
I've been there. I know it all too well. So we saw each other at the show, the Delta show in Oklahoma City, which was awesome. Great to see you like every year now. And we were talking duck numbers, and we just got into a conversation. I was like, oh my God, I go, we have to get on a podcast because of course, like now the talk, season dates are out, everybody's got their dates, people have started, and then of course now the duck numbers, the talk and the spreadsheet and the little, picture of everything that's going on comes out and it's splattered everywhere, and then that's like the talk of everywhere. So, because for us out west here, which is crazy, we've gone to three pintails, which you and I were talking about, and I want to talk about more. And all of us out here are like, oh my God, we're going to go from three pintails to one pintail or no pintails because we're going to freaking shoot so many between Oregon, California, Washington. And then we go backwards on geese and we go to like two, and we don't understand that. So there's a lot of wild stuff happening right now. And then you started making it clearer and clearer, just explaining like checking on the nests and how technology has changed all of that. So that's what I want to talk about for sure, because that's mind-blowing to me.
Part of what I was telling you at our expo, and hey, it was great to see you there and all the other people we had there. We had a big time in Oklahoma City. If you missed it, join us next year in Des Moines, Iowa. Little
We're
promo.
already ready. We're ready for it.
But yeah, so the duck numbers, because we're in a drought, we've had drought across the prairie and other places as well. Folks are concerned, rightly so, that hey, duck numbers are falling, we're trending the wrong way. And being conservationists like most duck hunters are, we want to be conservative because we're looking at it long term. We want to duck hunt 10 years from now, 20 years from now, as long as we possibly can, right? So, and what's happened over time, waterfowl management, the only lever they have to pull in terms of harvest is to tighten or loosen the regulations, right?
For sure.
But what the emerging science, though, has shown that, what we harvest as hunters, does it matter? Yes. Does it matter as much as we think it does? No, not at all. And so a lot of people are having great consternation about the idea that the pintail limit is going to go from one to three this season, right? And that change was made as a result of a changing model that showed a few things. One of the things it showed was that the Fish and Wildlife Service had their survey work had overestimated the harvest by a factor of 2.3.
Really?
So more than twice, their harvest estimate was more than twice of the actual on
Harvest
pintails.
numbers.
Right. So that's one thing. Also, what it showed
So
was,
how did they get there? How did they, like, it was just their formula or how? Okay.
So banding data. So the scientists use long-term banding data sets, and I'm not a waterfowl biologist, but I just
Sure,
work with a whole
just
bunch of them.
as much info as we can get.
I work with a bunch of them, and so the banding data showed that, our harvest was really not having hardly any impact at all on populations. Now, what has impacted populations is, loss of habitat and an increase in the amount of predators, and so nest
Always,
predators. So
always.
those are the two big factors. This isn't a pintail study. It was a mallard study done in the prairies, and what the study showed was that 91% of the population dynamic. So what determines a population happens during the months of April, May, June, and July, not during hunting season. So 91% of the events, in other words, mortality,
Dying.
happens then, not during hunting. And so the other 9% is hunting and disease and
Anything that
predation,
happens outside of those,
hawks,
no.
hawks and eagles. Yeah. So it's a mind-blowing stat, right? And meanwhile, us as hunters, we're regulated
For sure.
to not take too many. And so we've been conditioned as hunters all of our lives that, if we just don't shoot those ducks, we're going to stockpile the ducks. Well,
Right.
it might work that way for some other animal species. It might work that way for deer. It might work that way for turkeys. But it does not work that way for waterfowl. And so every well-meaning person who's a duck hunter says, well, why can we now shoot three pintails when the breeding population is 41% below the long-term average? The reality of it is, we're not going to affect the pintail population very much, even by going to a three-bird limit.
Because, well, and you could also go back to, like if I was listening before and listening now, it's like a lot of the numbers weren't exact or as close as they should have been, so the numbers were off. And listen, it's great that hunters are saying, hey, I don't need, like I'm going into the season going, I am not, and I'm gonna be as strict as I can on everybody that goes with me. Unless there is an accident, there is no reason for anyone to shoot a brown hen pintail.
Yeah.
You know
And
what I mean? So I'm
yeah, and
still trying to make, what I can do, and I still try to shoot drakes. Hens are gonna get shot. This shit happens, whatever. But I'm saying I'm gonna still do what I'm gonna do, and I know a lot of other guys are gonna do the same to still keep us going in the right direction.
Yeah, and so I looked at the so it's interesting. We get a whole slate of reports that come out from Fish and Wildlife Service on September 2nd this year. So
Gotcha.
one of the reports is a hunter harvest and activity report. And it's a really cool report for a lot of reasons. And how they derive that, there's a number of things that go into it, but mainly it's derived by the wing survey. So
Yeah, I do those.
Yeah, certain people are selected to send in every wing, a wing from every duck you shoot, and the
I try
tail.
to do as many as I can every year. I do it.
Yeah, so the wing survey, that's how they determine harvest for different states, flyways, the whole thing. Interestingly, out of that, and I'm going off my memory now because I didn't just look it up, but in California, which is the highest pintail harvest state, I believe
Absolutely.
86,000 pintails was the
How many?
report
How many?
harvest, 86 for last season. The ratio of drakes, males to hens, was like 3.5. So for every hen pintail that was shot, 3.5 drakes, right? So we're not killing that many hens anyway. Relative, and the total harvest continentally for pintails was right around a half a million. I think it was a little less than that, actually, something like that. But so, that's not very many, really, in the grand scheme of things.
No.
So, by comparison, we killed in the States 3.5 million mallards. Okay,
Right.
so
And if
yeah.
you and if I'm, if I'm doing my math correct, okay, so if the country shot 500,000
Yep.
pintails last year, I'm just taking a stab that we might shoot 1.2 to 1.5 million pintails this year, give or take. I don't
I
know.
will. I will. I will make a. It's okay. So not that
Or do
I'm
you think, am I
promoting.
going too high because I'm thinking everybody's
Yes.
going to shoot three?
Yes.
Okay.
If
Because.
you're promoting betting, bet the under on your 1.2. I
Because.
would be shocked if it hits a million, to be
Does it?
honest.
Okay. Because
Yeah.
I do, like, I guess I'm so skewed on the pintails, and here's why. Because, And I guess I should have guessed a little better, because I always think about how many birds, how many pintails we see here through California, Oregon, Washington, right? So how many pintails we see versus the rest of the country. Like, of course, everybody in the world can shoot three pintails, but how many guys are really going to have the actual opportunity, to shoot them? Us here, we, it's a dream for us. Like, this is insane for us, because we're so giddy. Because I could just see, like, because last, the last few years, well, since I've been out here 20 some years, you take your time, you shoot your best pintail you can, and then you sit there and you watch hundreds pour into the decoys and just wave at you, and you're just like, oh my God. So you're probably right, for sure.
I've got it written down somewhere here, and I can't seem to locate the exact piece of paper. But yeah, the after California, the next biggest state for pintail harvest, I'm pretty sure is Arkansas, and it's like half that, like 40,000, something like that, or 30,000. North Dakota's in there in the 30,000. No, I'm wrong.
Louisiana.
Louisiana was next, was second, I believe. So
And the thing about
Texas.
Oregon or Washington is we don't have the hunter numbers to have a high number of harvest, compared to, Arkansas or Louisiana or Dakota, like you said, North Dakota. Like, we probably see more and more of those pass through here, but we don't have the hunters to bang those numbers,
Without question, the harvest will increase.
Yeah, for
But
sure.
it's not, I don't think it's even going to double, and
Okay.
it's sure not going to triple. It's not a we're going from 1 to 3, so that's
Right.
going to triple the harvest.
That's what I
It's
was
not.
thinking.
You
Yeah,
know,
and then I started. Yeah, I need to think better.
it no, it's crazy in a lot of states too, and this is also in that report. I believe the average number of ducks killed per hunter for the whole season is like 10 or 12.
Whoa.
That's all year. So, when you look at that and you go, well, out of that 10 or 12, yeah, maybe out by you guys, three of that 10 or 12 is going to be pintails or
For sure,
four.
for sure.
But the number of hunters, and there will be a bunch that do shoot three pintails.
Sure.
Yes. But the number of hunters that are going to dramatically increase their total season harvest based on a three pintail limit is not very many. So,
Crazy. It's
yeah.
crazy.
So,
Yeah. It's wild to me. Like I said, we're excited out here, but
yeah. It well, where I'm at in Wisconsin, I think I have shot. I could probably count on one hand the number of pintails I have killed in Wisconsin. Now, I've shot pintails in a lot of other places that I've been
Sure.
lucky enough to travel to,
For sure.
yeah, in Wisconsin, I can remember one day where I had a flock of four that I probably could have shot a second one out of that flock. And I think I'm trying to think another time I had a pair come in and I would not have shot the hen anyway. So regardless of the limit was
Right, wouldn't
two or
matter.
three or
Right.
whatever. So
Right.
yeah. So for me in Wisconsin, we might kill 50 or 100 more in
Not gonna matter,
Wisconsin.
right? Yeah,
So
it's not gonna really do
it's
much
not gonna matter much.
specifically.
And here's the good news. So because of the way the survey works, the numbers that they just reported and the metrics, for the for the season structures for next year, it will be three pintails again next year.
Gotcha.
So,
Because you were telling me, like, there's a threshold that the population has to stay at, and now that they have better numbers and better viewing of nests, and they have some more technology, we'll talk about that in a little bit, about seeing everything that's going on and being more clear, that it can sustain that, no problem.
Yeah, I mean, look, the numbers will fluctuate a little bit, right? But yes, right now the way the metric is, the new model, that it's an interim harvest strategy, call it the right thing, or management strategy. That strategy, at 1.2 million pintails in the breeding population, the season below that, the season would close, okay?
Gotcha.
The lowest we've ever been on pintails in the breeding population was in 2022. We were at 1.78 million, so just shy of 1.8.
So we've been
So
over that for a while.
we've been over, yeah. So this year we're at what, two, let me look here. Pintails 2.24 million. So 2.25 million was the breeding population.
Yeah, I actually have the
And
this.
it went up from last year by 13%. So
Yeah.
we're headed the right direction. And
That's
if we
awesome.
can just get some rain on the prairie,
For sure.
it'll help everything, but certainly it will help pintails as well. So
For sure.
so the point is, we've got a three pintail bag limit this year. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will recommend again a three pintail bag.
Next
Now,
year.
one thing to note, Kansas did not adopt the three pintail limit for this season. They
Really? The
kept it at
state
one. They kept
really
it at
stepped
one.
back. The state backed off. Get out.
They kept it at one, which they're allowed to do. So states could decide, hey, we don't like this, and we're not going to adopt it. So they can be more restrictive than the federal framework.
Oh, that's wild. So they're the only state that did that.
To my knowledge, yes.
Wow. Kansas, sorry about that. You guys need to write somebody a letter. That
So
sucks.
yeah. But
Oh my
I
God.
also don't I looked at their harvest stats, and
Yeah, how many do they
they're
even
not
shoot?
a yeah, not that many. So it's probably not that big of a deal there for Kansas waterfowl hunters.
Crazy. That is crazy.
They're after the greenhead, I think.
For sure, for sure. So we were talking about like the research tools, and they were talking to, you were telling me about like how they've gotten better at finding nests and doing stuff like that, because you've read the stories and you've seen the old videos of like four-wheelers and dragging a chain through and trying to find her. She jumps up and you're like, okay, there's a nest there, and you kind of go through. But now you said the technology is kind of bumped up a little bit.
It absolutely is. So about 2017, Delta started working with thermal imaging cameras mounted on drones. And to be honest with you, some of our scientists said, I don't think this is going to work. And it kind of did. It worked pretty well, but there were some issues with it. The thermal imaging cameras, if it was a sunny day, everything glowed,
For sure.
but they've refined the technology. You know how
Yeah.
fast technology moves. So they've
Yeah.
refined the technology. And now, boy, the last few years, it's really darn good. And we have several projects on the prairie. We've got one in South Dakota. We've got a couple in Manitoba. We had one in Saskatchewan, where we're using drones to count pairs, nesting pairs in the spring. And then we're using them to find ducks. We're using them to find ducks on nests, and
Yeah.
then we're using them to find broods and do brood surveys. And we've been using nasal saddle markers in some of our studies.
Oh yeah, I
So
saw
what
that
they'll
on there.
do, what the researcher will do, is right before that duck is about to hatch the nest, they'll go
Yeah.
catch the hen, and they put this bright yellow marker that's got a symbol and a number or letter on
Okay.
it. So it might be +8.
Okay.
Okay. And with our drone at 200 feet up, we can see, we've got really good cameras that can zoom. We can see that hen. And so they monitor the brood with that hen once she hatches. They'll go find her
That's wild.
again.
That's
And
crazy.
so they'll monitor, say it's the one +8. So
Right.
they'll go find +8. And This week she hatched, we know how many eggs she had. So we
Right.
know, oh, well, of her 9 eggs, 7 hatched. She's got 7 ducklings.
Yeah.
A week from now we find her again. Oh, now she's got 5 ducklings, so we can monitor brood sizes that way. And it gives us a much better count on broods. The other thing is, the way we used to do bird surveys and still do to some extent is on foot. And you know what happens when you're on foot? You pull up in a truck or an ATV, and you guess what all the ducks do? They all scatter.
For
Well,
sure.
if you send a drone up 200 feet above them, they don't do anything differently than they've been doing. So you
They
can
don't do
actually,
anything. They don't even move, right?
no, they don't. And so you can count the broods on that pond. And not only that, you can see them all with the eagle eye. And then you've got the thermal imaging camera. So they all throw a heat signature. So you can actually accurately count the exact number of ducks on the pond and know that, hey, we know how many broods and how many ducklings and are on that pond. It's really cool.
Well, the other thing that it's probably helpful for is, like you said, like you can check in so you can get some other numbers moving forward, meaning that she started with 8, she ended with 5, or whatever the case may be, and that goes back to predator control. Was there a farming practice that disrupted? You know what I mean? Because they always talk about, and I get it, it's clean farming just about everywhere, right? So, did that get farmed? Nest get destroyed? Like, whatever the case may be. Like you said, the April to July, that whole section of 4 months of, those birds being, the killed, it's incredible.
It is. And the other thing too, when we're actually during the nesting part of it and the ducks are on the nest, once you find the nest and we do something, the students will candle an egg and they can tell the development stage of those eggs. So they can
Right.
guess within a day or two, usually, of when those ducklings are going to hatch. And so once you have that knowledge, you don't have to go back to that nest every time. Whereas before, you'd go back there every few days and, what are you doing? You're blazing a path to a duck nest. You're disturbing that duck.
For
And
sure.
ducks do abandon. So sometimes, if they get pestered too much,
They'll
they'll
just go.
leave and just go away, So this is a much better way for the ducks too. You can observe them from 200 feet up and go, yep, she's still on the nest. We're good. So,
Totally less evasive. I mean, that's a
it
huge thing. And like
absolutely
you said, like the last thing you want to do is traipse a trail right to the nest. I mean, a
Yeah.
coyote can easily follow your scent right into her scent to, like whatever. Like, for
Right.
sure, that totally can go on, right?
And the other part of it is from a research, human power, it takes a whole lot less time to send up a drone. You can cover a lot more area in a lot less time and more accurately
For
too.
sure.
So it's more accurate, less resources, and it's better for the ducks
Yeah,
and get better data.
I mean that's
Win-win.
pluses all the way around. I mean, you know what I mean? Like
Absolutely.
that's a huge deal.
Yeah.
Less evasive, like all that, efficient. I mean, like you said, you can't get any better. Like,
Yeah.
thank God it's finally catching up. It's kind
Right.
of I kind of feel, listen, you've been around this a long time, like so have I. It's like, I've been listening to duck numbers since I was a kid, right? And being told, from all the guys above me, like, this is what you do, and you gotta be a conservationist, you gotta do this, you gotta do that. And we've grown through all this stuff, and now it seems like, I'm not saying the numbers were way off, maybe in some things they were, but it's like now the technology is just making everything a lot easier, more efficient, better, like just so much more accurate, so much better for everybody.
It absolutely is. The other thing I'd say, and this is something I want to write about more,
Yeah.
and I might be getting myself into a little trouble here by saying this, but I'm going to tell you anyway, because I just want to put this out there. So the survey, So this year the survey said there's 33.98 million ducks, right? And
Right.
so that's an index.
Yeah,
And
I can
so
pull this up so we could here, I could pull it up so we could look at it. Hold on. Let me pull it up. So there it is. There's the numbers. So there's the bottom, 33.98, right?
And so this is an index of habitat in a certain area. This is called the traditional survey area index. Okay. There are more, a lot more than 33.98 million ducks. Okay. That's the index. So this indicator index thing. And so they do it this way. It compares year over year over a long-term data set. This data set goes back to 1955. Okay. Every year, except for two for recently for COVID, right? But every year they fly this. So it's an index, it's an indicator, trend indicator, more than it is an actual population. What'll blow your mind, and so if you read the fine print in this report, and it's 80 some pages, I think,
Oh, I can only imagine, right?
certain duck species are not included in the 33.98. And one of those species that's not included is wood ducks.
For sure.
You know how many wood ducks there are? It's millions, right? You know, if you put wood ducks in this chart, they would be, right up in there with, I don't know if they'd be as high as mallards, I doubt it, but they'd be up in there with blue wings or shovelers or widgeon, right? Few million. They don't even count in this number. So in that 33.98, there's no wood ducks. There's also a bunch of other species that aren't counted, aren't
Oh, for sure.
included in the totals. And so when people say, well, there's 33.98 million ducks, no, it's an index. So, compared to last year is where you get your value, right? Compared to previous years, compared to the long-term data set, that's where you get your value. And that's an indicator of how the populations are trending.
Yeah, like so when you're looking at, okay, so long-term average, mallards are down 17%, but like you're saying, they're still in a really good place. So, when people see that red 17, right?
Oh, there's cause for concern there for sure. When it was wet in the mid 2010s, back to 2015, we were at in this index, we were at 9 or 10 or 11 million mallards. So yeah, there's cause for concern, but remember that long-term average that goes all the way back to 1955. And while we've got that up there, when we look at pintails and it's minus 41 and everybody gets super concerned, and there's cause for concern. Early in the survey in the 1950s, the numbers were 10 million, 6 million, 8 million. We had a lot more pintails back then. And so and some people have said that those counts may or may not have been wholly accurate, but those skew that number. If you look at, and I did this, I looked at the last 10 years of surveys. Okay. The last 10-year average for pintails is 2.3 million, the last 10 years. Now that's
Gotcha.
still not great, but if you look at where we're at now,
We're right
2.24,
there.
we're right on the 10-year, about 10-year average. So, and then before that, when it was wet on the prairies, we were up in almost 4 million again. So, a big part of this problem is that it's been dry. We've had a series of dry years. Is
Yeah, and
that
that's what you're seeing, right? You're seeing
the,
scaup down, you're seeing bluebills down, you're seeing pintails down, blueing teal, and the mallards, and for sure, like you're talking about, like there's cause for concern, like you said, for sure, because of the long term. But
Absolutely.
if you look at it's the dry versus the wet years, everything is going to flourish in those wet years. Like it's going to be just gangbusters. More water, more broods, more nesting, more everything, right?
So So it's, I'm not saying there's no cause for concern. There is.
Right.
There are some things that, are a little concerning, but, is the, is the sky falling? Are we,
No.
it's not. So,
Yeah, I mean we're still in a decent spot. You know what I mean? And listen, everybody always says, like when the numbers talks start and everybody starts going wild and this is down and this is up and everything else. And I said, I always bring back that one thing that just, if we don't get weather from the top of Canada down, it's not going to matter. Because you saw last year and what happened. I've never seen a year like that in my life. Of all the years hunting, I've never seen anything so wild and weird and just totally whack job of weather, of not weather, I guess I should say. And birds didn't move. Guys were saying, where's the birds? Where's the birds? Like, there was birds stuck in Canada, and I don't know if they ever left.
It's interesting to look at some of the midwinter survey numbers, and you can tell, and they're driven by weather. Now, a lot of the birds will move based on photo period, which is, amount of daylight. Like we've got a lot of blue-winged teal, already you're in Texas, or they're sunning themselves in the tropics already, and so
Sure.
I it's not. But those ducks that hang in, the mallards that'll hang in, if they've got open water for roost and they've got some food, they're anymore, they're more inclined to just stay where they
Hang
are.
out. Yeah, and the pressure, once the pressure starts being put on them, if they have food and water, but then they get a lot of pressure, they're gonna go. There's so many factors,
Is.
so it really is, you can't just, throw a dart on the dartboard and go, yep, that's it. It's
Yeah.
not.
And it's funny to me every year. I shouldn't say funny. It's ironic to me every year that, the southern hunters, and bless them, 'cause
I know.
the weather changing
I know.
has definitely hurt their prospects for good seasons,
For sure, for
but
sure.
they're pointing fingers at folks up here up north, and saying, yeah, you guys are holding all the birds. Well, our season already ended, so if anyone was running an ice eater to keep open water, they're not doing that anymore. Or like
Why bother, right?
I had a guy last year, our season ended before Thanksgiving, and I had a guy in early December telling me that all these guys up here by me were holding ducks, and I said, our season ended 10 days ago. We're not holding any ducks. If
Right.
we're holding ducks, they're here voluntarily. We're not doing anything to help. I don't know.
I mean,
And it was funny, 'cause the day that that guy called me, a buddy called me and said, "Hey man, you want to go ice fishing?"
Oh my God.
I'm
It was
like,
that cold?
it was cold enough. Yeah, we had some ice.
Yeah, and
So
it's like, listen, I'd love to trap them here, and hold them here, but like there's no way to do it. Like
not happening.
they just come and go as they please, so there's no nothing. They're on their own accord. But and listen, everybody, the conversation has got into more people planting more food, more places and all that. And listen, there's factors in that too. Like okay, so more food is being planted in certain areas and flooded and more duck clubs and more properties and more stuff like that. But if the guys are hunting it and pressuring them, they're just not going to stick around. They're not just going to keep going and getting beat up. They're going to move on at some point. So like that conversation can only go so far, because they'll either do one of two things. They'll go nocturnal or they'll leave.
And that brings up something good for me to tell you about. And we at Delta Waterfowl haven't widely distributed this yet, but we're working on a new initiative, and it's called Restoring Our Refuges. And so what we're interested in doing, and this will really help the southern duck hunter, right? It'll help all duck hunters, but it's really aimed at helping our folks who have had some issues down south. What we've identified, we Delta and some partners have identified, is that there's this huge backlog of maintenance. We're talking about broken down levees that were washed out, different things at refuges, and there's
Sure,
just
water
money.
structures, whatever. I'm sure.
There's just not money to fix it.
Right.
And so we Delta are doubling down. We've been working on this for a while, but we're doubling down, and we're going to do everything we can to get those refuges back in shape for a couple of reasons. One, so we can get some ducks down there to
Sure.
hold some ducks,
Yeah.
create that habitat, but also, the hunting opportunity will improve in and around those refuges if
Sure.
we can get that done. And so that's a
Sure.
major initiative for Delta. We're going to have I'm working on a magazine story about it. We're going to have some press releases,
Awesome.
and we're working on a national scale to make that happen, to improve
Well,
duck hunting for everybody.
and you're seeing some of the initiatives on that part too. You're seeing some of the, federal refuge systems opening up some more hunting opportunities as well. Like that's gonna make a huge difference as well. Like all these things coming into play, because we always talk about this, why are hunter numbers down? Like what's going on? We could talk, till we're blue in the face. I always go back to, okay, so maybe this generation didn't usher in the next generation, and you could talk all that, and all that, but I really do think it all comes down to just access. And
It
that's the
does.
hardest thing.
Yeah. I mean, if we have access and we have lots of ducks and geese, hey,
Guys are going to
everybody's
go,
happy.
and
It's,
girls,
yep,
they're going.
absolutely. So, not to toot our horn at Delta
Yeah.
too much, but we are working on these things, and our predator management program produces ducks, our hen houses produce ducks, and then on the back end of that, we're working to make sure that we have that quality access for hunters, and also that good habitat, that good wintering habitat for food. One of the things that's happened, like you look at Louisiana and other parts in the South, one of the things that's happened is they've gone away from, and duck hunters didn't do this, but they went away from rice agriculture.
Right.
So there's not as much rice on the landscape, and there's not as much food, and so
There you go.
you're not drawn as many ducks to those areas. And so, and that affects everyone. It affects the private land guys, it affects the public land
Everybody.
people. Every duck
Yeah.
hunter out there feels the pain from not having that wintering food base
Yeah.
there.
Less ducks around, less food, less ducks. I mean, less
Absolutely.
water, less ducks. Like you could throw it all at it.
Yeah.
Right.
And in California, they can't burn the rice fields like they can in Arkansas and other places. And so that water stays on more there. But there's programs, there's W Rice in Arkansas that pays those producers to keep water on the landscape longer, and then pays them more if they'll allow access. So there's some
There's some incentives.
programs like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So those are good things, and those provide
Yeah.
access.
Like if you've ever been to, I'll just take that for instance. Like if you've ever been to kind of Colusa or the Sac Valley in California, and you drive down any stretch of freeway that has a refuge system and has rice, I mean, there is miles of water on rice and miles of birds. Even in a bad year, it's unbelievable. And water, food, birds, like it's not hard. It's not a hard
No,
equation.
it's not. And I get to go out there beginning of November. So
Oh,
we're
where are you heading?
Near Yuba City. So
Oh yeah. Nice.
we're doing our annual Delta waterfowl decoy hunt. And so
Oh
every year,
yeah. That's
yeah,
so
every
cool.
year we pick a species and
Oh, cool.
we invite carvers to participate in that, send us a decoy, and we
Oh,
get
that's
some
amazing.
beautiful decoys.
Oh, I bet. Oh, I
And
bet.
then we hunt them. We go to a location, we hunt them. I photograph it, we write a story, and then all those decoys will go back into our chapter system and get auctioned off
That's
to
cool.
raise funds for conservation. It's fun. This year we're doing wood ducks, so
Nice.
we're coming out and we're gonna hunt a few days
Nice.
with the host, and it should be pretty cool out there. So
So here's a question. So we talk about like predator management, and you guys are doing a ton of stuff to figure out that's an issue and do whatever. So I guess my question is, how do we press upon everybody that lives in those areas to predator hunt as much as possible? Like what else, you know what I mean? Like what else can we do other than literally getting a busload of rednecks who have rifles to go up there and literally shoot every coyote? Because I'll get right on the bus. I'll be on it in 2 seconds. I'm there, right?
know, yeah, I love the sentiment. Interestingly, coyotes are kind of
Or
not,
raccoons or whatever.
yeah,
I just threw
yeah.
that in there,
So,
right? But it's probably the other ones, right?
yeah, it really is the raccoons and the skunks, and to some other degree, there's lots of things that it will eat a duck nest, right?
For sure.
You know,
Foxes, right? Yeah.
foxes
You name
are, yeah, they do some serious damage, especially if there's a den nearby with pups in it. You know, they got to feed the family. So
For sure.
foxes are efficient. They'll actually go hunting ducks like we hunt ducks, except they don't have any bag limits.
Yeah, oh no, they don't. They don't. That well, listen, and that's why I said, like, you put some like Arkansas rednecks that raccoon hunt, or anybody through that section that comes on up that raccoon hunts, and I'm telling you right now, the numbers will get a huge bump next year if we send a bunch of guys up or gals, because I know a couple guys who are coon hunters and have the dogs and do the whole deal, and they are for sure efficient. You know what I mean?
So our predator management program, so we trap from March 15th to July 15th, and we hire trappers on a contract,
Awesome.
and they're able to target specific areas, nesting areas, and it's really efficient. And their goal is to get those predators off the landscape as early in that season as they can before the ducks get on the nest
For sure.
and create that safer zone. You're never going to have a full, you
No,
know,
but right,
but
but
and it
any bit
really
is going to help.
it makes a major difference. And so, you know, some of these areas that have lots of ducks settling on them because there's lots of wetlands, but there's not as much cover there. There's not as much grass cover because it's intensely farmed. So you got a strip of cover around a wetland,
I
and
know.
the ducks all go in there to nest, and every fox, every coyote, every
Goes right
raccoon,
in.
every skunk, everything else, they all are in that little strip of cover, and the ducks
Just
have no
goes.
chance. So predator management gives the ducks a chance. It balances out the, you know, levels the playing field a little bit more so that a number of those ducks can hatch a nest and not die in the mouth of a predator.
I wish I'm going to throw this out there because I've been going to Canada for a long time. I wish Canada would say, you guys can predator hunt, because when you go up, you have to buy like a full game license, like a big game license to hunt coyotes and then other predators and stuff like that. I wish Canada would say, hey, you know what? It's open to you guys to come up and predator hunt in the spring. You know, before the nesting starts, like that winter through, it's open to you guys. Here's the charge. It's not that much, because in turn, it would promote that and help that along and maybe get some more people up there. Because I don't know how many times I've been up there and I'll sit with Brad Fenson. Like, Brad, I'll sit with Brad and I go, hey, I'll just call or I'll whatever, I'll do whatever so he can shoot a few. Like, I am 100% trying to help it out. You know what I mean? But I can't. It was something like 500 or 400 and some dollars to get a license to shoot a coyote because it's in with your deer or whatever else. And I'm like, I'm not doing that. Like, that's a bit too much. So I don't know if there's some program, but if Canada did something, like, let's go.
I think that has to do with fur trappers and fur
Yeah.
value, and
And it
so
might, right?
I think it does, and that's probably why they, have that license fee set as high as it is. But
Yeah, you just gotta turn some of us loose up there. Like, it'll get better. Like, I'm here for it. Believe me. I'm so here for it. Oh my
No, I
God.
hear you. In absence of that, like I said, Delta Waterfowl has professional trappers on the job. And their goal isn't to kill everything. Their
For
goal
sure. For
is
sure.
to
Balance it out.
protect those areas that have high numbers of nesting ducks and not enough cover for the ducks to hide. So,
Yeah,
and maybe.
listen, you guys are doing all the right things. You're doing the Lord's work. There's no doubt about it. Like, you're up top and you're going down south. Like, you guys are doing as much as you can. There's no doubt about it. So I got no complaints here for sure. You guys are grinding hard. The new stuff that's coming up, everything that you guys are doing is getting better, which is great for everybody. You know what I mean?
It's been fun to be at Delta the whole time, but
Yeah.
in recent years we've grown so much that we've been able to magnify the impact, and so we're doing more, we're producing more ducks, we're able to affect things better on a policy standpoint, open up more access, work on all these different things that. I mean, we call ourselves the Duck Hunters Organization, and
No doubt.
honestly, I mean, it fits. It's what we are, and we
Right.
tell people and we live it too that everything we do impacts duck populations and waterfowl populations. We
For sure.
use duck
I know. We
generically.
use that word. I know.
Yeah. Duck
But it's everything.
populations
It's
and
listen, it's shorebirds. It's down to everything. Like, it's everything for sure.
So everything we do is for ducks and duck hunters, and that's our mission. That's we live it. And if you know us or know some of us, which I know you do,
Oh yeah.
we're all passionate.
There's
We're
no
all
doubt.
crazy about waterfowl hunting and waterfowl. And so it's really fun that way, and it's rewarding. It's fulfilling too. And when I'm sitting out there, I feel like, okay, I've made a difference,
Yeah, I was just gonna say you're making a difference
Pretty
for
neat.
sure every day. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
Yeah. Yeah, listen, if anybody's watching this or listening to this, because we always throw the video up as well. I mean, if you're not a Delta member, like, it's simple, deltawaterfowl.org. Like, go there. I mean, you just heard this whole podcast about where your money's going, what it's going for. They're helping the nesting, they're helping down south with the refuge system. Like, there's all kind of things going. There isn't one thing you could look and say, yeah, I don't know if that's for me. Like, if you're a duck hunter, if you're any kind of waterfowl hunter, you absolutely need to be a member and just do it, because it doesn't, like, there's no time like the present for helping down the road. And I don't know how long I've been a member. I don't even look anymore. I just re-up. I don't even know if I re-up on time or I'm 2 years ahead. I don't even know. I just go and I just do it. So, because I just know what's going on, I always go an extra step because I know that's how my dad taught me, and that's how I keep going. Like, I buy two duck stamps every year for what? Like, because I just do, right? That's me. So, and I collect one and I keep one, to have to hunt, but I've just always done that. So just do your part. Everybody's got to do something, or my kids and your kids and everybody else's kids or whoever else isn't going to have birds to shoot, or even us, in the next couple of years. So that's my pitch. There you go.
Hey, we appreciate that, and you're spot on. I buy two duck stamps too every year, and I belong to every waterfowl conservation organization I can, and Even though I work for one, I belong to like four or five others,
It
and
all makes a difference.
it really does. So I would just say this, go hunting, people,
For sure.
folks, I be concerned about the duck numbers. Do what you want to do for your own ethic. If it's, hey, I'm not shooting any hen pintails, don't shoot any hen pintails. But don't feel bad about shooting three Drake pintails, because,
Well, and here's I'll say this, before we end, I want to say this too, because you just brought up something. I don't like some of the stuff that goes on social media, and what I'll say, and is this is a perfect example, just like you were saying that. If I see a guy post a picture with a hen pintail and a green winged teal and even a coot, I don't care what he shot, and he's like has a picture and he's smiling and he's all happy, and then the bashing starts, and I'm thinking to myself, the first thing I think of is totally opposite. I think he's got a busy schedule. He got to hunt one day this month. He's not as fortunate as me and you. He doesn't get to travel the world. He doesn't get to hunt three, four, five, however many days a week, right? Maybe he gets out once a month, twice a month, whatever, and he had the opportunity to shoot a couple ducks. I don't care what he shoots, because just like you said in all the numbers, do you think a couple of those guys are going to make a dent in any of the populations?
They're
It's a
not.
no.
No.
So next time you see something like that, I'm just telling everybody out there, next time you see something like that, the first clown who posts something mean to somebody like that, jump right on them, because we need to stick together. And that is like the worst thing you can do, because I want some guy to go shoot whatever he wants to do. As long as he's legal, I don't care what he shoots. If he has a good time, he got out once that week, whatever. Maybe if he had success this day, maybe he's going to go next week. Like, I'm happy for that. And that's the stuff we got to stop.
It's everybody's at a different place in their waterfowl hunting journey.
For
It might have
sure.
been the guy's first hunt. That might be his first duck,
I
like
mean,
the everybody doesn't shoot a banded canvasback or
yeah, every
four
week, every other
greenheads on
day,
their
right?
first hunt. So yeah,
Just,
you gotta take that into
yeah,
account. But
be
yeah.
nice and stick together. That's the only way we make it out of this deal, or we only get stronger, is if we stick together and we do stuff. I don't need to exactly like the way you hunt or whatever you do. We could go down the jump shooting section. I don't care what you do. If you do it legal and you're having a good time, and then you're a Delta member and you're in conservation, then I don't care. Like, everybody just get along and enjoy it. God, that's what it's here for. So listen,
Absolutely.
that's been an awesome hour for sure. Like, great info. I mean, I'm so glad I got the info and got the numbers, and we looked at everything, and the research and everything that's going on at Delta is incredible. So, and the other thing, like I said, go be a member. And if you're in Des Moines next year, Iowa, the show's on. You could look on the website and go. It's such a cool show to go to. It's getting better every year. So I love traveling to it and enjoying it. So yeah, I'm psyched for next year. Yeah.
Hey, yeah, thanks for having me on,
Yeah.
and I hope everyone out there has a great, safe, and enjoyable waterfowl season.
There you go. That's the FA podcast for today. Paul Waite from Delta Waterfowl. Thanks for everybody for listening. Appreciate all the partners that we deal with, from Federal Ammunition to Leupold to Weatherby, Roger Sporting Goods. So thanks for listening, and that's it. Appreciate it.